ground to have been seen from the peephole, but the best of surprises.
"I'm Brooke King, and that's my mommy and daddy,"
she gushes, jerking a thumb over her shoulder at her parents, where they stand behind her, both wearing tight, apprehensive smiles.
"We're here to get our farm. Are you the farm lady? You don't look sad. Mommy said the lady we're coming to see might be sad, but you look real pretty and happy to me. So where's the farm lady?"
"Brooke Marie King," her mom sternly cuts her off, then offers me an apologetic mix of a grimace and grin. "I'm so sorry, Henley. She's a bit precocious. How are you? And thank you for having us." I don't have a chance to respond to any part of what she said before Miss Priss, her sweet little head covered in red ringlets, precious chubby cheeks, and a mouth missing more teeth than not, is talking again.
"Henley, that's your name? Then you are the farm lady. Hi, can I come in?"
I can't contain my belly laugh, absolutely delighted by this tiny wonder, and step back, giving her the wide berth to waltz in that everything about her demands she be granted. "You certainly may. It's so very nice to meet you, Brooke. And yes, I'm Henley, the farm lady." She walks inside as fast as she can without running, obviously mindful of manners she's been taught, while her mother simply sighs and her father just shakes his head with a smile. I motion for them to enter as well, and Keaton joins us. After all the obligatory handshaking and a few more exchanged pleasantries, he shows them to the country kitchen, then comes to help me carry in the food and drinks. "Their daughter may very well be my new favorite person in the world," I quietly tell him.
"I know."
He closes in behind me and wraps an arm around my waist.
"She can't just steal my title in 5 minutes,"
he laughs good-naturedly. "She's a doll, Keaton, an absolute doll," I whisper.
"You know,"
he brushes his lips along my ear.
"I can give you that, a daughter of our own."
"That cute?" I laugh unbelievingly.
"Abso-fucking-lutely."
His adamancy gruff.
"Baby, have you seen us?"
"Oh, here we go," I laugh. "Stop while the food's still hot. Here." I hand him a platter. "Take this in there." I grab the drinks and follow.
"If you'll excuse me."
Bree starts to stand as soon as we rejoin them. "I need to go search down my daughter. Lord knows what she's snooping through or breaking." I stop her, shocked at myself. It just popped out of its own accord.
"If it's all right with you, I'd be happy to go find her. You sit. Enjoy the meal."
If you're sure, I don't want her to be a bother,"
Bree stammers. "I'm sure, and no bother whatsoever. It'd be my pleasure." I smile at her, not missing Keaton's surprised look aimed at me out of my peripheral. "You all go ahead and start. Brooke and I will join you soon." And with that, I set out on my hunt, actually giddy with excitement. I just simply can't wait to see what she's doing, to hear what she says next. I'm not exactly sneaking through the house, but I'm not calling out her name either. My intention isn't to catch her doing something wrong. In fact, it's the polar opposite. I want more than anything to wander upon her and watch her doing something right, something childlike, innocent, purely for healthy curiosity and true enjoyment, unencumbered by the woes of cynicism, judgment, and expectation that always inevitably find you by the time you're an adult. From the moment I laid eyes on her, I felt an overpowering, fascinating bond with the little girl I currently seek. Perhaps it's because she reminds me of myself at her age, curious and independent. Or more likely, it's because she reminds me of everything I wasn't for too long. I'm not now, nor will I ever be again. They say youth is wasted on the young. Well, they haven't met Brooke. After the longest game of hide-and-seek ever played, I finally find her, in the very last place I dare to look. And to look, I must push the door open further and enter, which I do, stunned when I realize there was a complete lack of hesitation on my part in doing so. Not a single, even slight, falter in my steps, too preoccupied with finding her to get trapped inside my own head. Yeah,
I'm not imagining the baffling yet wondrous connection I somehow have with Brooke Marie King, because there's no one or nothing else, not even Keaton, that could have me walking into this room so easily. But for her, I'm already inside, breathing and heart rate both normal. "Hey there," I say softly, as to not startle her since her back is to me. She's busy, thoroughly examining the bulletin board on the wall and everything displayed on it. "Your mom said it was okay for me to come find you. Everyone's wondering where you went."
"Is that you?"
she asks, pointing to one of the pictures pinned to the board. "Yes," I reply evenly, tampering the pain suddenly trying to burn its way up my throat.
"Then who's that?"
She now points to Hadley, standing beside me in the photo, all decked out in her gown, the picture shot at one of the rodeo pageants she loved to enter. Never my thing, but I always helped her with her hair and makeup and clapped for her the loudest. And when she'd win, I'd proudly cry every single time. I jolt back to the present, having kept Brooke waiting too long for a response. Not only because I got distracted with memories, but more so, I don't have a lot, or any, experience with kids. So I'm unsure exactly what to say to her on the matter. I'm still silently debating appropriate wording for someone so young, when she saves me the trouble.
"It's your twin sister, huh?"
I gulp loudly. "Yes, right again. You're a very bright girl, Brooke. How old are you?" I change the subject, but I'm genuinely interested in the answer.
6, almost 7, but I'm smart as a whip. That's what all my teachers say. I get to go to the 4th grade class for reading and math."
She turns around to face me now, trying to smile, but unable to hide the sad wisdom in those huge eyes of hers. They're every bit as expressive as her actual words.
"Your sister died, didn't she? That's why my mommy said you might act sad, right?"
Strangely enough, I appreciate her bluntness. Imagine that, finding comfort in a candid conversation with a 6-year-old. Beats the hell out of pitying frowns and prescriptions. "Yes, Brooke, she did. I had a twin sister named Hadley, who I loved very much. But she went to heaven a long time ago." I almost add that she's now joined by my mother there, but quickly decide that might be a bit much. "I miss her every day. And on some of those, it does make me sad. But on other days, it makes me happy when I think about all the fun times we had together." There. I'm pretty sure that answer was appropriate and catered gently enough. "Are you ready to go eat?" My voice spikes with the hope she'll say yes, thus ending me very carefully squirming my way through this inquisition.
"Almost."
She lifts her chin and plants one foot out front in an authoritative stance, which is absolutely adorable.
"Henley, am I going to get to live here?"
There's not a doubt in my mind. One day this child will make a real difference in the world. Probably in politics. Hell, I'd vote for her today, no matter for which office she was on the ballot. I'm not sure yet, sweetie. We should probably wait and talk to your parents about that. So let's go join them. The sooner we do, the sooner you'll find out the answer." I wiggle my eyebrows to try and entice her.
"Well, if I do get to live here, can this be my room?"
Again, the correct answer here is, we have to discuss that with your parents. I know it is, yet that's not what I say. "You sure this is the one you want? There's another one downstairs you might like better." She's already shaking her head, vibrant curls flopping in protest before I'm done talking.
"I'm very, very sure this will be my room."
"Why?" I ask immediately, somewhat desperately, unsure if I'm prepared for the meaningful answer I know she'll give, and completely, permanently alter my outlook on life forever.
"Because,"
she sighs dreamily and then exceeds my expectations and shatters the last piece of armor that was still secretly guarding my heart when she throws her arms out to the side and starts spinning in slow circles.
This room was meant for pretty, smart girls who can be tough on a farm and rodeo queens. Girls who have lots of pictures with their friends and blue ribbons. I can do that. I can be this room's new supergirl.
I giggle, gasp, and wipe away a tear all at the same time, floored by her whimsical, unlimited soul and its power to heal mine. And then I laugh again, because the thought crosses my mind. She's a much younger, female version of Gatlin. Even at a mere 6 years old, everything she says means something. Something profound, beyond the boundaries of her earthly age. Brooke, I can't say for sure what your parents will decide about anything. But I'll tell you this. I couldn't agree with you more. If anyone in the entire world belongs in this room, it's you, precious girl. Now come on. I hold out my hand. Let's go eat. Maybe after that I'll show you the horses.
There's horses?
She squeals. Yeah, three of them. You like horses?
I love them. Daddy said someday I could have one, as soon as he gets a better job. His boss is a cheap bastard.
She slaps a hand over her mouth and her eyes widen.
I'm not supposed to repeat that. Please don't tell on me.
I won't say a word, I promise. We're almost to the country kitchen, where the others are no doubt done eating by now, when she tugs on my hand to stop us. What is it? I look down at her and ask.
Henley, no matter what happens when we talk to my parents,
she casts her eyes downward and fidgets a bit.
Can we be friends?
Brooke, will you look at me, please? She does, and I smile warmly at her. I would love nothing more than to be your friend, forever, no matter what. Her sweet little face lights up, and she tightens her hold on my hand.
Yay! I don't have too many friends. The kids at my school say I'm a freak who talks too much and uses weird words.
You're not a freak or weird, honey. You're just smarter than they are. I'm not saying they're dumb, and you never should either. But you're exceptional. Hopefully they'll catch up to you a little more one day. And if not, that's okay too, because now you've got me, and you know what? Not only do I understand every word you say, but I could use a friend, too.
There they are.
Keaton stands when we walk in to pull out my chair for me.
You two get lost?
No, we just had some important matters to discuss. Right, Brooke?
Right,
she agrees, grabbing a biscuit.
Got it all worked out, Mummy.
Oh, I'm sure you did. Bree's snicker is tinged with worried exasperation. Henley, I hope she wasn't too much trouble. Or vocal. No trouble at all, I assure her. But vocal? Pretty sure that's a set-in-stone thing. She's... I pause to choose a word worthy. Astonishing. If you don't mind me asking, have you had her IQ tested? I think it's probably higher than mine. The proud papa chimes in this time, grinning at his daughter with obvious love and pride as he answers.
Well, over 100. 97th percentile, right, baby?
Yep.
Brooke nods proudly.
Up top, brainy smurf.
He laughs, holding up his hand that his daughter instantly high-fives. I start to make myself a plate, eyes on task, and about as casually as a fart during a prayer, I break the ice. So, did the three of you discuss things while we were gone?
Henley,
Keaton utters while clearing his throat.
Can I see you in the other room for a minute?
Secrets hurt feelings,
Brooke interjects, and I laugh, smiling at her. No secrets, promise. I rub her head, tousling her curls. I'll be right back. Once out of earshot, Keaton crosses his arms over his chest and tilts his head, looking at me with frustration.
Just what in the hell was I supposed to discuss with them, woman? You haven't told me anything either, remember? Sure, We thoroughly covered the weather, current events, and I now know every damn thing about bumfuck Wyoming, where Mike is originally from. But that's about the gist of it. You left me hanging, same as them. What took you so long, and what are we telling them? I can't offer to refill their tea again, Henny. They're on to that stall tactic.
Oops. Minor oversight on my part. I'm sorry. I slide my hand up his chest and rise to my tiptoes, offering him my lips. He kisses me chastely, then pulls back.
Seriously, baby. What are we doing? If you haven't decided yet, that's all right. Just tell me so I can explain to them that you need more time. Leaving them wondering and on the edge of their seats isn't fair.
Wasn't my intention. And I already said I was sorry. Now calm your tits and let's go back in there. I got it. I start to walk away, but I'm quickly stopped by a large arm curling around my waist and tugging me back against one very hard chest.
Calm your tits,
he parrots hotly on my neck.
Tell you what, instead of tanning your ass for that one, I'm gonna play off your choice and do anything but calm your tits later tonight. Gonna suck, lick, bite, and pinch those beauties till you're so not calm, you come long and hard before I even get near your sweet pussy.
Okay, time to wrap it up. Would it be too incredibly rude to demand the kings leave this very instant? Yes, damn it, it would. So I keep a hold on my manners, even though my panties are soaked and it's taking colossal restraint not to beg him to take me right here on the floor. He laughs dark and deep, pinching one achingly hard nipple.
See how that works. Sure don't feel calm, baby.
Keaton, stop. I slap his hand away. I can't walk back in there with my headlights on high beam.
Gonna have to,
he laughs,
and preferably in front of me, about to burst through my zipper.
He presses his rock-hard erection against my ass. Dear God, I sigh. We're already the worst landlords ever. Making them wait all evening just to walk back in there like we just got done shooting a porno? They may turn us down at this point. Just think of something gross like shoveling horse shit. We gotta go back in there. Chapter 34. I apologize for keeping you waiting. Just now, as well as all evening, I say to Mike and Bree when we return, my nipples in check. Haven't looked to see how Keaton and his hard-on are faring behind me. I'd forgotten that Keaton didn't know my exact plans either and couldn't share with you, and then I grinned down at her. I got so caught up with Miss Brooke here, I didn't realize how long it had really been.
No apology necessary, Mike offers. We've had a nice time. The dinner was delicious and much obliged.
If you're ready, I take the seat Keaton's once again pulled out for me. I'd like to discuss your plans and thoughts, along with my own, now. Keaton sits beside me and links our fingers together, resting our joined hands on his thigh.
That'd be great,
Mike answers, giving his wife a tense grin and sitting up straighter. I announce I'm ready to talk, then clam up, palms sweaty. I suddenly have no idea how to open or exactly what to say. I've never been in their shoes. Married, a child, chasing dreams that hinge on what-ifs and most likely seem unattainable. And with the apprehension that comes with those thoughts, my throat begins to tighten. Keaton, of course, picks up on my anxiety and speaks first.
We didn't go into a lot of details before, so why don't you tell us? When you're looking to move, what kind of payment you're hoping for, and if your long-term goal is to own or simply rent.
I rub her hands on his thigh, thanking him for always seamlessly picking up the ball when I drop it.
Okay.
Mike adjusts in his seat, scratching his chin.
You taking this, or am I?
He consults his wife. Another point in this family's favor in my mind. They're a team. I like that.
I can.
Bree answers him, while you figure out why your daughter's being so quiet over there. We all laugh and look over to investigate. Hey, boy, I was wondering when you'd come say hello,
I coo at Bourbon, who's finally joined the party, hiding under the table and gobbling up every bit of the food Brooke is sneaking him.
"What's his name?"
she asks, now that she realizes she's caught. I bet she's been dying to ask, but didn't so as to keep their little arrangement concealed as long as possible. I tell her it's Bourbon, and she giggles, turning a toothless smile on me.
"Like the whiskey?"
Of course she knows what Bourbon is. Probably knows how long it's made and where it originated, too. Absolutely brilliant. "Yes, like the whiskey." My voice fades on the last word in reminiscence. "Michael, how does your daughter know what whiskey and bourbon are?" Bree asks, wearing a scowl that matches her tone.
"Really?"
he says mockingly.
"Brooke, honey, what are the 5 biggest states? In order from largest to smallest, please."
Her tiny nose scrunches, and her mouth twists, and she spouts off.
"Area or population?"
"Area is fine, sweetie."
She ticks them off on her chubby little fingers.
"Alaska, Texas, California, Montana, and New Mexico."
"And how old is Bill Clinton?"
he asks. It takes her about 30 seconds of more face scrunching.
"Our 42nd president, William Jefferson Clinton, is 69.
Mike doesn't say a word, just turns to his wife and gives her a gratified smile. Keaton, on the other hand, can't help himself.
"Holy shit. Oh, sorry, my bad on the cursing. But is she right?"
he asks in astonishment.
"Yes, she's right," Bree concedes with a huff. "I hate it when he does that. Heaven forbid I'd prefer she sticks to facts like those and not know about alcohol at 6.
Memories of my own mother feeling the exact same way flash briefly through my mind.
Muddy loves to use that little game to remind me. There's not much she doesn't know.
"Don't worry, Mommy. I've never drank any."
"Oh, well then."
Even Bree laughs along with the rest of us at that one.
"I feel so much better now. Thank you for abstaining, honey."
"You're welcome,"
Brooke chirps and slips Bourbon another bite.
"Anyway, as we were discussing,"
Bree reels us back in on topic.
"We'd be ready to move in 30 days. That's the required notice on our current place. And of course, our goal is to eventually own, but right now, renting is the only realistic option. With Brooke in school, I've returned as well, to work on my veterinarian license. That will take me a while, so Mike's income is all we have at the moment."
I can feel Keaton's gaze on me without looking away from Bree. He knows precisely what I think about what she just said. A veterinarian. The one thing I had mentioned this town needed. I have to ask. "So, when you're licensed, do you plan to open a clinic here in Asheville?"
"Yes, definitely. Not only is it crazy we don't already have one, but we want to keep our roots planted here."
Keaton chuckles.
"Bree, you have no idea how happy you've made my henny. She's about to plumb burst, 'cause she was just griping not too long ago about the same thing. No clinic here."
"I wasn't griping," I mumble. "But I was commenting on the insanity of it. I can't wait for you to open a place. You'll no doubt be highly successful with that."
"I sure hope so," she smiles.
"With Mike working and you going to school, who will work your farm?"
Keaton asks. With merely a quick side glance, Bree hands this one to her husband to answer.
"I'm hoping that working a farm will be my job,"
Mike states.
"And I'm hoping to be his handy-dandy farmhand,"
Brooke adds.
"As far as rent, I'd feel more comfortable if you proposed that number. I don't want to insult you or overshoot myself in the foot."
Mike shallowly laughs at the end, diverting his eyes for a split second.
"I don't even know which farm we're considering."
Keaton raises his eyebrows at me and smirks.
"So now, I'm passing it back to Henny."
I take a deep breath, then another, still needing more. "I just need a final minute to consider everything. I swear I won't be long, and this will be the last time I make you wait." I stand, stopping Keaton with a hand on his shoulder when he tries to do the same. "Brooke, would you like to go see those horses now?" "If that's okay," I ask her parents, who both nod.
"Yes!"
she shrieks, jumping out of her chair. "All right, then," I laugh. "Let's go. We'll be back soon." As we drive to the horse barn, I think back to what my mom said in my dream, about giving this house another chance to make a new, whole family happy. They are the perfect family to choose. And I have, in my hands that were useless for so long, the power to change their lives, to give this little girl, with her face currently pressed to the window in anticipation, a great chance at a gloriously happy childhood. We pass by the farmhand cabin, and I think of Gatlin. I wonder where he is right now, praying it's somewhere of his dreams, and he's happy there. Such an intricate part of my life, even in what short amount of time he was in it. He left an impact that helped me heal, change, forgive, and live again. If life truly has any hand in destiny, and doling it out deservedly, Gatlin, wherever he may be, is happy. When we pull up to the barn, Brooke jumps out of the truck and takes off running so fast it scares me.
"Sweetie, wait for me! I need to turn on the lights and be right beside you. Horses can get spooked easily."
"I know. Walk up to them slowly on the front left side so they can see me and don't stare in their eyes. And talk nicely. Tell them I'm coming."
Damn this kid. "That's all exactly right. And very smart, Brooke. But I'd still like to be with you."
"Yes, ma'am."
She stops cold and waits for me. I catch up, slide open the doors, and go in with her. Just like my old bedroom, I take sure steps on sturdy legs into a place that, for anyone else, I'd balk at entering so casually. I flip on the main light and revel in Brooke's sudden sigh of wonderment.
"I see them," she whispers. "But we need to be quiet. They could be sleeping. Horses can sleep standing up. Did you know that?"
"I did," I whisper back. "But good thinking." And just out of curiosity, 'cause I'm doubtless that she'll know the answer and I don't, I ask her, "What other animals sleep standing up?"
"Zebras and elephants," she proudly replies instantly. "Cows can, but usually don't. Oh, and flamingos. Henley?"
She looks up at me.
"Thanks for asking."
You're welcome." My brow folds in confusion at her odd statement.
"Most people are sick of my fun facts, but not you. I love trivia, and you're not tired of playing yet. And you ask a lot of other questions, too. That's my favorite part of us being friends."
"I have another question." I temper a straight face.
"What is it?"
Her green eyes positively twinkle. "Are you ready to go meet the horses?" Now a small snicker escapes me. She whisper shouts,
"I sure am!"
She takes my hand, leading the way with tiny, tentative steps.
"You should be the one to talk. Introduce me."
"Right, of course. Hello, beauties. How are you tonight? I've brought my friend Brooke to meet you all."
"That one first."
She points to Barley, a girl after my own heart. He was my immediate favorite, too. We approach him, and it's fascinating to watch how, like Brooke and I, the two of them fall into a hard and fast bond with each other. She's cooing and petting while Barley eats it up, rubbing against her hand. Oh yeah, match made in heaven. After a while, I remind her there's two others to meet because honestly I think she's forgotten. We go meet Scotch and Rye, quickly because while she likes them just fine, she's made her choice and it's Barley. I let her spend a little more time with him, then reluctantly tell her it's time to get back to her parents and her fate. Which, of course, I don't say to her, but it's true. Everything is finally, wholly settled in my mind and heart, and I can't wait to tell everyone. Not a single sliver of doubt remains within me, and I'm beyond certain my plan is the right one, and would make my mom and sister proud.
"Barley, Scotch, and Rye?"
Brooke assesses aloud on the ride back.
"Hmm," Henley, do your cows have names?
No, I laugh. Why do you ask?
Can I pick out one and name it Cece for my daddy?
Sure. Anyone you want. Why Cece?
It's short for Crown and Coke. That's what Daddy drinks.
I push the brakes, laughing too hard to drive. This beautiful, amazingly astute child. She's the freshest breath of air one can inhale. A star so bright, you almost can't look directly at her without squinting from the light she puts off. One in a million. And she found me. Hey, Brooke?
Yes?
I still need to talk to your parents, but I'm pretty sure we're about to be neighbors. If you promise me one thing.
What?
She grins, bouncing in her seat. Always tell your mom or dad first, but promise me that you'll come over and visit me as often as you can. At least, like, 3 times a week. Or more. Promise?
Promise!
She bobs her head and claps. Time to go and make the kings an offer they can't refuse. Chapter 35.
You good?
Keaton mouths to me when Brooke and I return, finding that they've all moved to sit in the living room. I nod assuredly and give him a full, confident smile. I've never been more sure of anything in my life as I am on my decision. No more contemplating or dodging the moment of truth, where I speak my proposal aloud, unable to take it back. I'm ready. Brooke is gushing on and on to her parents about Barley, and I hate to interrupt, but it's getting late, so I take a seat and clear my throat. Brooke, sweetie, I know you're excited, but can I talk to your parents alone for a minute? I politely ask.
Yes, sorry. Do you need my help, or can I go play with Bourbon?
Oh, Brooke, if you only knew how much you've already helped me. I think I've got it from here. I smile, just short of a laugh. But ask your parents about going to play. Her dad tells her it's fine, and when she's out of the room, I adjust my posture, fold my hands in my lap, and begin. Mike, Bree, I'd love for your family to live here, on this farm. I peek over at Keaton, sitting across the room, grinning from ear to ear, not missing the smoldering satisfaction in his eyes. And the reason for it? He's not over there simmering in his own juices of primality because I picked his farm to live on. He really wouldn't care which I chose. No, he's currently eaten up with carnal territorialism that I chose to live with him anywhere. And, I continue, I don't want to overstep my boundaries, but I've got some thoughts on logistics that I think will suit all our needs.
Okay.
Mike speaks hesitantly, shooting his wife a glance riddled with worried suspicion. You can't work a job and keep up with a farming life that produces a good income at the same time. There just aren't enough hours in a day. So, I'm proposing this. In lieu of paying any rent for the first year, you tend to my horses and what cows I leave here as payment. You can use my bull to breed and build up a stock of your own, and split the money you make off calves with me to pay for use of my bull and mama's. After 1 year, we can discuss you buying some of those cows and the bull outright. You're welcome to the hay I already have put up for feeding, but you'll need to pay any vet bills for calves you breed. Also, I'll pay the property tax each year, but you're responsible for utilities from day one. As of year two, your rent will be $1,000 a month. I will never sell you this farm, but I'll make it as much yours as possible. You can live here forever if you'd like, but I just can't sell it. I hope you understand. Oh, I almost forgot. Barley, one of the horses, will belong to Brooke, no charge. And she's already got her room picked out. It's important to me she have the one she's chosen, please. Finished. I sit back, able to get a full, deep breath now that I've gotten it all said and off my chest, waiting for someone else to speak, which doesn't happen as quickly as I'd anticipated. Rather, I have 3 people just staring at me, all seeming shocked with their matching slack jaws and wide eyes. Amidst their silence, the sweetest little head pops out from around the corner.
Barley is mine?
Brooke's voice is shaky, as though she doesn't believe it could possibly be true. I don't know. I turn to her parents. Is he? Brooke, what I tell you about eavesdropping? Bree gently reprimands her. Now go play like you said you were going to the first time.
Yes, ma'am.
Her chin drops, but not before she gives me a thank you and a thumbs up. Precious. Henley, this is a very generous offer, Bree says, unable to meet my eyes. We don't want any charity or to take advantage of anyone. Are you sure about this?
Henny,
Keaton interjects.
Look at me.
When I do, his eyes are as questioning as his next words.
She's right, baby. Very generous offer. Maybe you and I should speak privately for a minute.
But his suggestion is nothing more than an obligatory double check. He already knows my answer, and when I give him the look, the patented one created and reserved for Keaton alone, that says wordlessly, I mean business, mister. He laughs and gives me back a supportive smile and wink.
Yep,
he tells the Kings.
She's sure. No charity or taking advantage here, so stop worrying about that. This is what my woman wants, and I'll warn you both, she's not fun to argue with, nor will she be changing her mind.
Yay! I have a horse and a princess room!
Brooke shouts from, still right around the corner, if I had to guess. I toss back my head and laugh, memorizing the sound of sheer joy in her voice. Bree shakes her head and mutters,
I wish I could tell myself it's because she doesn't know what eavesdropping means, but we all know that's not it.
Mr. Keaton just has a loud voice. I can't help it.
Brooke chimes in again.
She's right,
Keaton chuckles.
Totally my fault.
Henley, you forgot to tell them about my promise.
Oh, she's right again. I can't help but laugh. I hope you don't mind, and I've already made sure she knows to ask one of you first, but I've made Brooke promise to come over and visit me regularly. If it isn't already obvious, I'm pretty taken with her.
I'd say the feeling is mutual.
Mike grins.
And?
He takes his wife's hand.
We will never be able to repay you for your selflessness, but we'll sure try. If you're positive.
He pauses, probably giving me one last chance for a retraction that's never gonna come.
We'd like to accept your offer.
I am, I smile, then motion toward the hallway with my head, to which he nods.
Brooke, you can come in now,
I call out with his permission. She darts in the room, straight to me, and jumps in my lap, throwing her arms around my neck. It's the best hug I've ever gotten, and I return it with everything I am.
Thank you, Henley. You're the nicest farm lady in the whole world and my new best friend, except for Mommy and Daddy. You all tie.
I'll take it, sweet girl, and you're very welcome. I kiss the top of her head that smells of strawberry shampoo and innocence. Welcome home, Brooke.
Mighty nice thing you did tonight, baby.
Keaton murmurs against the back of my neck as we lay in bed.
You think maybe you got a little carried away, though?
Do you? I shoot back.
Oh, Henny.
He laughs.
You have to cover up your trap with more leaves than that. No way I'm stepping right into that one. I asked you first.
No. I really don't. It felt right, so I went with it. They're a wonderful family who just need a chance to jumpstart their dreams. I can give them that, so why wouldn't I? Unless, of course, you changed your mind and don't want me to move in with you. Let's see him make his way past that trap, laid right out in the open with no bait even. It'll snag him up, guaranteed.
Gonna start packing you tomorrow.
His baritone laced in primality, sliding a hand down my stomach.
Want you in our house. Our bed. As soon as possible.
Caught within seconds. Knew it. Speaking of our bed, I cover his sneaky hand with my own and remove it, at least until I have my answers I want. We taking this one, or using yours?
I don't really care, but mine's already there and put together. Seems easier to use it.
Have you ever had sex with another girl in it?
Your bet it is.
He immediately clips.
You know, I think I like it better anyway. More comfortable. Been meaning to burn mine, actually.
Right answer, I purr, and move his hand back to where it was. I won't even ask about the couch or any other furniture over there. You know what to do. He sucks on my neck and shoulder.
I get it. And you're damn right I know what else to do. Almost forgot.
His hand disappears, and I'm flipped over to my back, his body hovering over mine.
Arms up, sassy.
His raspy demand is irresistible, and I comply, my cami top over my head instantly. He slides his hands up my arms, and twining our fingers together, lifts my hands to the headboard.
Grip the bars, and no matter what, don't let go. If you do, I'll tie him up there.
Keaton, I breathe heavily, finding a hold like he's told me to. What are we doing? I know he hears the tremor of excitement in my voice, a healthy fear of the unknown, and how good it will feel causing every erogenous zone of my body to tingle.
I'm able to uncalm your tits, baby, and after you come for me, I'm gonna fuck you long and hard. You'll be all warm and wet, begging for my cock, and I'll slip right in and stay there as long as I want.
He promises, in a voice of seduction kissing his way down my chest. Oh, God, I keen, arching my back. I absolutely adore his mouth, whether it's deliciously torturing my flesh or seducing me with deeply groaned promises. Or smarting off, challenging my wit and lifetime desire to bicker with him. Or speaking softly, kindly, settling my soul. I actually can't think of any time I don't like it. Yeah, Keaton fucking Cash gives good mouth. He laves his tongue around the first nipple, then the next, pushing his erection between my thighs while he does so. I want to touch him so badly, run my hands over his toned back, squeeze that tight ass and scratch my desire into his skin. But I resist, keeping my hands locked on the spindles in the headboard as commanded, which gives the interaction a whole new, forbidden, taken aspect that has me panting with vulnerable anticipation.
I think my baby likes this,
he hums, still teasing his tongue around my nipples.
You want me to tie you up one day? Put you under my complete control, where I can do anything I want to this unbelievable body, and you just have to take it?
Yes, I moan. God, yes. But right now, I want you to stop talking and...
And what?
He gives me that sexy, knowing smirk of his, thrusting against my core again.
Say it. Say it dirty for me, baby.
Suck them, Keaton. Suck on my tits hard. Grab them and squeeze, pinch my nipples, anything, everything. Just get me there so I can have you.
Oh, yeah, he groans. Love my naughty henny. Gonna kiss that sexy talking mouth first, though.
And he does. Nothing slow or thoughtful about it, only pure hunger. His lips are hard and demanding, and I open for his crazed ravishment. Tongues battling in frenzied passion, his strong lips bruising my own while his large, expert hands massage and grope my breasts just right. He leaves my mouth on fire, and with one long, slow lick, finally moves down and sucks a blood-filled, pulsing nipple between his lips. He teases the tip with flicks of his speared tongue and tiny nips with his teeth, while using a hand to adore the other one. He lifts his head to switch and hisses.
I fucking love your tits, woman. Perfect. Plump and so responsive. Pretty pink nipples just begging me for more. But I need you to come. Soon.
What? You giving up? I taunt.
Hell no. And you know better than that. I'll go all night if I have to. But I can smell how ready you are. And damn if I don't want inside that sweet pussy of yours right now.
Pull my panties off, I whisper. When he does, and by pull, he obviously thought I meant tug and rip them off me. I spread my legs wide open and bend them at the knee, my feet flat on the mattress. He shucks his jeans and boxer briefs unbelievably fast, then climbs back on the bed, sitting back on his haunches. Staring down, he slowly licks his lips and takes his dick in hand, rubbing the engorged tip up and down my slick center.
"What you want now, baby?"
he rumbles, eyes staying put. "You know exactly what I want, and you want to give it to me?" I wiggle a bit.
"Want to hear you say it, Henny. Drives me crazy."
And less surprising each time, I want to say it. Lustful, erotic things that get me as amped up as they do him. My baser instincts feeding off his animalistic reaction and flaring hotter within me. Indeed, I have a naughty side. "Fuck me, Keaton. Fuck me good like only you can. Let me feel your weight on top of me and use my hands on your body."
"Goddamn,"
he roars, burying himself fully inside me in one powerful thrust with a pinch of delicious pain.
"You give so good. So fucking good."
He didn't say no when I mentioned using my hands, so I caress his back, push on his ass to encourage him impossibly deeper inside me, and kiss every part of him my lips will reach. He hooks his arms under my knees and changes the angle, lifting me off the bed, grunting in the sexiest way as he slides in and out of me.
"Tell me where, baby. Tell me when I hit your spot and I'll hammer it."
I move a little, guiding him and feel it. The first tingle of pure euphoria. "There, Keaton. Right there." His chest rumbles and he slows his pace, making sure to hit exactly where I've told him with each thrust.
"Yeah, just like that. I feel you quivering on my cock. Let go, Henny. Come all the fuck over me."
I scream, my pussy pulsing in and out around his thick girth as I come violently and what seems endlessly. An orgasm from beyond my deepest depths, thorough and started internally. Unbelievable. A far, far cry from a topical clitoral orgasm, although those are great too. My poor man, I see the wince of regret on his face, knowing he's got to pull out. But the new, unabashed sex kitten I've admittedly become has an idea, and an undeniable need to please him as much as he does me. He plunges deep a few more times, then pulls out quickly with a muted grimace. But I'm ready, sitting up and taking his dick in my mouth before he even sees it coming. No pun intended. The feral groan that comes from him while gripping my hair, so loud and savage, almost sets me off again. I'm making him crazy, and that makes me heady with power, spurring me on further. I tighten my lips and move along his length in time with his hand, swallowing every drop of his cum. When he's no longer twitching and pulsing, I slowly pull off, keeping the seal tight, and then look up at him. His cloudy gaze is already on me, his beautiful, sweaty chest heaving.
"Fuck me, baby, that was amazing. Can't ever go back to anything less. Maybe you could..."
"Get on birth control," I cut in. "Sure, but we're finding a doctor at least 3 towns over. No way I'm airing my business in Asheville." He laughs, then cups my cheek.
"I'll drive you to the end of the globe if it means I get to stay inside you. Come with you. In you. And moving has just been postponed. This is far more important, and it's happening first."
"Agreed. Now if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna walk up those stairs, if I can walk at all, and take a long, hot bath."
"Right behind you."
He swats my ass.
"I'll even wash all my favorite parts for you."
Chapter 36. The next few weeks are a dizzying frenzy of activity. Exhausting, but exciting. And almost never do I have time to stop and overanalyze, get sucked back into my habitual habit of psyching myself out, or let myself get even the tiniest bit scared or worried, which is good, because deep down I'm not. So keeping my mind too busy to concoct up trouble for no reason is one less thing I have to worry about. Together, Keaton and I took 2 more trailer loads to the sale barn, earning me close to 20 grand. And after a long argument where he tried to act all macho, blabbering about how he's the man and wouldn't take my money, then his attempt to fuck me into submission, which I pretended to protest against for all of 5 minutes, and finally me laying down the law, the final word, I deposited that money into his account to provide my share toward our soon-to-be-combined expenses. We moved the cows I was keeping, about 50 head, to Keaton's land. But as promised, I left the bulk of them, the bull, hay, and horses for the kings. Truth is, neither Keaton or I need the stock or money. But it's important to me to not only give to the kings and my share to Keaton, but also to keep a small slice of my independence and my farm, which technically I am keeping forever. I finally find a moment to sit down, and of course, my phone rings. Hello?
Henley, how are you? It's Mr. Bowles.
I'm good, you?
Can't complain. I was just calling to let you know I have the rental agreement, with all your altruistic provisions drawn up. Please take no offense. I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't at least say that I'd advise against a lot of them.
I appreciate that. You looking out for me, but I won't be changing my mind. Shall I come by and pick them up?
Anytime. Go ahead and bring Keaton with you. I also have the final documents ready that will settle all matters with Mr. Watson for good. You both need to sign them. Quite big-hearted of you on those matters as well.
Let's just say, I laugh hollowly, I'm making up for a lot of lost time where I wasn't exactly the person I wanted to be.
Well, you're doing more than a fine job. So I'll see you both soon?
Yes, sir. I'll call you when we're coming. Just need to see when Keaton's free.
Very good. I'll have everything ready.
I thank him and hang up, resting my head back on the couch. Everything is finally falling into place. No more Merrick and his bullshit. Soon Brooke and her family will be living here on this farm, and I'll be living with Keaton, using every day to appreciate every day.
Did I hear you on the phone?
Keaton walks up behind me, rubbing my shoulders. Yes, and please don't stop doing that. Feels great. It was Mr. Bowles calling. We both need to go sign the papers on the Merrick deal and pick up the contract for the Kings while we're there. Maybe tomorrow? It's late today, and I want to get the farmhand cabin cleared out. Bree and Mike might want to use it, and I haven't even looked inside to see how Gatlin left it. His hands stall and tense for only a moment, him quickly recovering, but I catch it. What? I ask. His tone plummets to a sultry timbre.
I have a better idea. Why don't I take care of that while you go take a hot shower or bath? You're tired and your muscles are bound up pretty tight, baby.
I suppose that'd work, I sigh. Thank you. Just make sure you box up anything personal he left in case he comes back for it. We can put it in the shed out back.
Yeah, I'll do that.
He mumbles and clears his throat, then comes around and holds out a hand.
Don't worry. I got it. And you have a date with... what's it gonna be? Bath or shower?
Shower, I respond automatically. As good as a long, hot bath sounds, I just don't have it in me to brave the upstairs bathroom right now. Although I did fine with it before, for which I was quite proud of myself. I'm too weary and physically exhausted to chance those factors very easily helping me into a full breakdown if I test myself too much.
All right.
He tries to hide his concern, knowing the thoughts that made my decision.
Hop to it, then.
He pulls me up off the couch.
I'll go clear out the cabin. Shouldn't take me long. We'll fix something quick for dinner when I get back.
He leaves me at the bathroom door with a languid kiss and parting swat on the butt to propel me toward the shower. While I bask under the hot spray, an eerie feeling comes over me out of nowhere. Not the "you're about to be killed in the shower" kind, but more an uneasy lump suddenly forming in the pit of my stomach, warning me not to get too comfortable with being comfortable. The wave of contentment I've been riding is too high, and something tells me it's about to crash, sending me flying onto the shore so hard, there'll be scars. The next morning, I wake in the safe haven of Keaton's arms, but the overwhelming sense of dread remains, churning in my stomach. After getting ready for the day, taking care of Bourbon and eating breakfast with Keaton, it's still there and I can't shake it, no matter how many times I reassure myself I'm being silly. Keaton picks up on something going on with me, giving me a worried side eye as we load up his truck.
"What's going on in that pretty head of yours, baby?"
he asks once we're on the road.
"I honestly don't know."
I rub my forehead, the pills I took not touching my rapidly building headache. "I just have this gut feeling. Something's off, or about to be off. As in terribly wrong."
"Henny."
He reaches for my hand.
"You've always been a worrier, which is fine. I love you just the way you are. But you don't have to do it anymore. Now that you actually let me, I've got you. Always have. But since you're finally acknowledging that you're mine, that means taking care of anything you want or need. There's not a damn thing that could go wrong that I wouldn't die fixing for you. Do you trust me when I tell you that?"
"Yes," I answer lowly but honestly.
"Could it be you're just skeptical that things can really be this good? That you're worthy of being happy?"
"Maybe," I shrug. "But I know what that feels like. The certainty that life will never be good or happy again. This feels different."
"Are you having second thoughts about your farm arrangements with the Kings?"
"No," I shake my head. "Absolutely not."
"Are you?"
His voice softens.
"Having doubts about us? Living together? Being together?"
"God, no." I squeeze his hand. "I love you, Keaton. That love is the surest thing I've ever felt."
"Okay."
He whooshes out his relief.
"Glad to hear it. At least both of us don't have to be worried."
He half chuckles.
"And I love you too, baby girl. So what else could it be? I'm out of ideas."
"I told you I don't know. But I feel sick because I have the distinct sense that we'll be finding out soon enough." I stare out the window, fighting for a calming breath, deciding a change of subject might help. "So you never told me. How'd Gatlin leave the cabin? Was it a mess? Any damage?" I already know the answer. Gatlin would never be that disrespectful. But it's the only conversation piece I can come up with at the moment, my mind still stuck on the foreboding unknown.
"Nope,"
he pops.
"Everything was fine."
"All right. So much for occupying much time. Now I have to think of something else to talk about. Or not."
"Say, did you ask Bree about furnishings? They might need stuff. If you don't mind them using it, that is. Sure saved with a lot of packing,"
he asks. "Excellent choice. This could take up some real time. And be fun, because I can use it to make him squirm, which I always enjoy." "No. I was waiting until I knew exactly what could be left. You know, after you remove all items of former debauchery from your place." I face the window again to hide my smile. Does it make me angry to think of Keaton having sex with other women? No. That'd be unreasonable. I was gone, having left on not exactly amicable terms with him, and he's only human. Does that mean I'm going to overlook it and fuck him in the same spots? That'd also be a resounding hell no. And there's the squirming in his seat I was expecting. I glance over and smile, getting way too much delight from his creased forehead and quickly bobbing Adam's apple. "So, what's it gonna be, Ashfall's infamous ladies' man?" I giggle. "Couch, kitchen table, every desk. I can't rip out my bathtub, shower, or countertops. We need to get those replaced over at your once bachelor pad."
"Henny."
His hand tightens around mine.
"I really don't like this topic, and would rather have my ass beat than answer you."
"You think I want you taking mental inventory over there, remembering all your rendezvous?" "No. But I also want a fresh start in our home, not just some closet space in your den of fornication."
"Oh, look,"
he almost shouts.
"We're here. I'll, get back to you on this scary conversation. Let's go."
He opens his door and jumps out,
Rude to keep the man waiting.
Mr. Bowles's receptionist asks us to take a seat in the lobby while she lets him know we're here. And as I sit, Keaton announces that he has to use the restroom. No, he doesn't. I can read him like a book written in Chinese and know exactly what he's doing. He's going to hide while he makes phone calls to every home renovator he can find, hiring the one with the soonest opening before he walks back out here. But enough's enough. I had had my fun. I don't want him spending a small fortune gutting his whole house, so I get up and go knock on the men's bathroom door. Keaton? I quietly call through it.
Be right out.
Babe, I was kidding. Just the furniture used as props has to go. Don't schedule a remodeling crew. I'm fine, promise. He opens the door, grabs both my cheeks, and lays a warm, torrid kiss on me.
All taken care of. What'd I tell you? You want it fixed, it'll be fixed. But,
he holds up a finger.
We don't talk about it out loud ever again. Only you. Only one I want to think or talk about, and only woman I've ever loved. Deal?
Keaton, we move soon. Are we going to have a bathtub or anywhere to sit?
What'd I just say? No talking about it. And taken care of. Damn, but you don't listen.
He shakes his head. Thank you. I place both hands on his chest and smile up at him. It actually does mean a lot, and I appreciate it. Love you.
Love you more, baby. Now let's go sign some papers and keep moving forward.
Lord knows what strings he just pulled and how much work will still be getting done when I move in, but I love him for it. By the time we walk back in the lobby, the receptionist is waiting to show us to Mr. Bowles's office. As promised, everything's ready and we're in and out in 10 minutes. Me being the one to write him a check for his fee this time.
You want to stop and have lunch?
Keaton asks when we're back in the truck. Where? My pitch skyrockets into a hemisphere of nasally fear.
At the diner,
he laughs.
You know of any other place to eat nearby that I'm not aware of?
No, which is why my voice just sounded like a really scared cheerleader. Keaton, you know I can't go in there, especially in prime time lunch hour. The whole town will be inside, waiting to either scowl at, scrutinize, or whisper about me. Thanks, but I'd rather starve. I cross my arms, angry he'd even suggest such lunacy. He pulls into the parking lot anyway and throws the truck in park, turning in his seat to look straight at me.
Henley Jean Calvert, soon to be Cash.
He speaks sternly.
Who's your man?
I roll my eyes and huff. Seriously, can't we wait until we get home for me to stroke your ego?
No, we'll be too busy with me tanning that ass. Now answer me. Or I'll do it right here in broad daylight for all of Asheville to see. That they might whisper about.
You know who my man is. Although he's pushing his luck at the moment, I snap at him. This isn't cute. Take us home, I mean it.
Hear me real clear on this, baby. We have a home in Asheville, and one day our kids will go to school and church here. They'll have friends. You have got to learn how to interact again. And as your man, I'm gonna help you with that. Show you that you can go into town any damn time you want with no trouble. Know how?
I mockingly tap my chin. By bullying me into going places that make me uncomfortable?
Not bullying, but pushing harder, yes. Now, we're going to go in that diner, with you holding my hand and your head high. If a single soul gives you 1 ounce of trouble, I don't care if they're 18 or 80, I will stop their shit fucking cold. No one will mess with you. But if they do, I can guarantee it won't be for more than 5 seconds.
Why even go in if you're expecting trouble? He rubs my shoulder and gentles his voice.
I'm not expecting trouble. Just reassuring you that if there is any, I'll take care of it. Henny, I have faith in the people of Asheville. Well, most of them. And you're painting an unfair picture of them based on where your mind was at all those years ago. And one douchebag with a couple conspiring bitches. You'd find a few rotten apples in any town in the world. You need to give this place another chance. Please. One more chance.
One. I hold up a single finger. And if you're wrong, I'm tanning your ass when we get home.
Deal.
He gives me a quick kiss.
Now out you go. I'm starving.
Maybe I'll find myself a new man while we're in here, I grouch.
That'd definitely get you the trouble you're looking for.
He laughs. I slam my door with a grumble. Drives me insane. Keaton fucking Cash. Chapter 37.
Sorry, baby man, you were right. That was awful. It's a miracle we escaped with our lives.
Keaton can hardly rub it in without laughing on our drive home.
I swear, when Loy offered you a piece of gum, and then Patty had the nerve to bring over a slice of your favorite pie, on the house no less, I thought I was gonna have to start throwing punches.
Speaking of throwing punches, that might just be how I remove the annoying, pompous gratification off his face. Everyone at the diner was as nice as they could be. Exactly how, if I think back long and hard enough, I remember them. And some of the older, more outspoken folks even commented on how nice it was to finally see Keaton and I together. I think Frank Miller's exact words, as he was clapping Keaton on the back, were,
"Managed to get her to give you a look, huh? About damn time. Now Martin can pay up on our bet before he kicks the bucket. Old bastard probably thinks I've forgotten. No dice, he owes me $20.
I let out a small laugh and look over at Keaton, not so aggravated with him anymore. Lunch was very nice, babe. Thank you for getting me to go in. I wouldn't have ever done it without you, and it was good for me.
You're welcome, and I'm proud of you.
He gives me a sly wink and focuses back on the road. I still can't believe people had a hunch or bet going about us, though. First of all, I didn't know folks their age ever paid that much attention to what the teenagers were doing, especially the subtle inner workings. And I had a boyfriend, while you also had at least 3 girls hanging off your arm and every word at all times. One of our moms or both must have gossiped about their suspicions.
Oh, it wasn't a suspicion for my mom. She knew exactly how I felt about you. And I promise you, she didn't say a word. Neither did yours. This is a small town, Annie. Every fair, church service, rodeo, ball game. Anytime we were both in the same place at the same time, which was often, all anyone had to do was have their eyes open and they'd know. The only one oblivious to what always existed between us was you. But that's all in the past now, thank Christ. Oh, I know being nice to Martin if you happen to see that crotchety old fart. He was betting against us, traitor.
I giggle, staring out the window, and my mind suddenly takes itself on a trip.
Are you cold?
Hadley asks me.
Freezing.
My teeth chatter as I hug myself, trying to stay warm.
I told you to bring a jacket. Football in October isn't known for being warm. You want to go?
Yes, but I'd never admit it. My sister looks forward to the football games all week, and I'm not about to make her leave early.
No, I'll be fine. It's almost over anyway, right?
She snickers.
It's not even halftime, Henley. Come on, we can leave.
Just as we're about to navigate our way through the crowd and down the bleachers, I hear my name being shouted. And then again, loud enough to be heard all over the raucous noise of a football game.
Henny, down here!
I look toward the voice and see an arm waving from the sidelines.
Oh, look!
Hadley nudges my arm.
Keaton's got a jacket for you. Go get it so we can stay.
Sure enough, Keaton just happened to notice, in the middle of a game in which he starts, that I, amongst everyone else in the bleachers, was cold, and is now holding up not just a jacket, but his letter jacket, that it appears he dug out of the duffel bag at his feet. Great. The very last thing in the world that I want to do, besides freeze to death, is walk down there and accept, then wear, his damn letter jacket in front of the whole damn town.
Who keeps their bag and coat on the field with them anyway? Keaton fucking Cash, that's who. But my sister's already up on her feet, cheering again, gabbing about how good so-and-so's butt looks in his uniform, with the girl beside her wearing a huge smile. So I start descending the bleachers. I'll be warm, and she'll be happy. The latter is all that really matters to me. And to ensure it, there's nothing I wouldn't do. I get to the bottom and lean over the rail, but there's no way I can reach. So Keaton, seemingly unconcerned with rules, safety, or the audience I know we now have, scales the fence like a polecat and hangs by one hand, offering me his jacket with the other.
Hey.
He gives me an easy smile.
Put this on. You make a damn pretty popsicle, but I don't want you cold.
I glance down the line, spotting Merrick sitting on the end of the bench with a bunch of other second and third stringers. He already won't be happy after the game, having sat through it. But me wearing Keaton's jacket will send him to a whole new level of angry. So I'm hesitant to accept.
Fuck what he thinks.
Keaton follows my line of vision and snarls.
If he's not gonna notice you, or that you're shivering and take care of it, I am. It's his own damn fault for being a shitty boyfriend. Put on the coat, Hen, and if he gives you any shit about it, you let me know. Cash, get off the fence and your ass on the field, Romeo!
Coach Van Wyck screamed, and with a parting wink, Keaton dropped to the ground, grabbed his helmet, and went in to score a touchdown. I shake my head and look over at him in lingering thought. He's right. The signs were always there, flashing brightly, even in public. But I had my misconceptions that at the time I thought were just. So I simply chose not to let my brain process the truth.
What you thinking about over there?
He asks. The time you gave me your letter jacket at the football game, because I was cold.
Oh, yeah.
He lets out a small, reminiscent laugh.
You know, now that you mention it, you never told me exactly how Merrick took that one. I figured he'd be mad. But if I remember correctly, you guys seemed fine the next time I saw you, when he flaunted you right past me, arms and lips all over you.
He grumbles. Oh my God. It hits me. The answer to one of my oldest, unanswered questions. I finally understand.
What is it?
Keaton asks worriedly when I gasp in discovery. And like I got so used to doing, I laugh at the most inappropriate time, to avoid any of the normal responses, such as anger, pain, or both. I just realized why Merrick was ever with me in the first place. All that half-ass work and time he put in, which had to be a pain in the ass for him. And he still lost. This time, my laugh is perfectly timed and real and from the gut, so joyous I even snort.
Henny, baby, when you're done over there, can you fill me in on what the hell's so funny?
Sorry. I pull it together, wiping my eyes. Merrick was furious that night about your coat. Didn't even drive me home. I rode with Hadley, and I didn't hear from him all weekend. But come Monday at school, where you would see us, things were just fine. Better than ever, in fact, like it never happened. I've been wondering why Merrick dated me if all he did was cheat on me, didn't come after me when I left, and then stole from me. I get it now.
Get what? That he's a narcissistic asshole who didn't appreciate you and thought he could get rich off your pain and distraction?
Yes and no. But really, it was never about me. Well, maybe the stealing was. He had to keep Krista in nice things and didn't figure I'd ever catch on. But the rest? The rest was all about you, Keaton. He hated you, and I mean hated you. The best at rodeo, football, girls, you name it. He couldn't beat you at anything. Except me. I was the one thing he knew you wanted that you couldn't have. So he appeased me just enough to keep me. Not because he actually wanted me, but so that you wouldn't have the slightest chance at having me. I was the only thing he could beat you at.
Makes sense.
He shakes his head.
Stupid fucker. I'd have given every trophy, award, uniform, anything for you. Wasn't in the cards, though. Fate didn't present me with that option. Neither did he. Not that I would have even considered it. Wanted you to want me on your own.
Keaton, I reach for his hand. Don't you see? You didn't have to give up any of those accomplishments, and you did end up with me. Forever. While Merrick had to spend years pretending, and now his life is in the shithole, and I got you, finally. We win, Keaton. Fate may have taken its time. Karma wouldn't wake her ass up, but destiny showed up and gave them both a kick in the ass, and they got one thing right in my life. We win.
We sure the fuck do.
He lifts my hand and kisses it.
I love you, Henny. I love you so damn much.
I love you too, Keaton. Maybe I always have. And hey, I grin and wait for him to glance over. Thanks for letting me use your coat. Warmed me right up.
I saw you sniff it, you know. Twice.
He grins. How? You were on the field playing. I wince, squeezing my eyes shut in embarrassment, realizing I got caught in his trap this time, bluntly admitting I did, in fact, smell his jacket. I couldn't help myself. From the moment I put it on, I was assailed by the intoxicating aroma of leather and cologne. So yeah, I may have sucked in a sample to keep for my memory bank. I was a normal teenage girl, after all. He laughs and gives my hand a squeeze.
Always had one eye on you, Henny. Always.
When we get back to the house, that will only be mine for a few more days, the ball of worry I'd temporarily forgotten with all the memories and talk of the past returns immediately. I'm not saying I'm psychic, but I knew bone deep that night. I should have checked Whiskey's saddle one more time before Hadley rode out. I dreamt my sister told me where to find a diary that just happened to be hidden right where she said, and my mom's advice, also delivered in my dreams, has been pretty spot on. So I tend not to doubt my gut. And with one step in the door, it's telling me stronger than ever that the something's wrong I've been waiting for is upon me.
What are you doing? Baby, talk to me.
Keaton comes up behind me where I stand frozen in the doorway, afraid to walk inside.
Did you hear something?
He picks me right up off my feet and sets me down behind him, placing himself in the line of whatever fire is waiting.
Stay right here. I'll go check it out,
he demands in a stern voice. I catch his arm, stopping him. I didn't hear anything. There's no burglar, but something's wrong.
What?
He bends at the knees to meet my eyes straight on, gripping both my shoulders.
Henny, you're worrying me. What the hell is going on?
I don't know yet. Come on, let's go in. Only one way to find out. We walk slowly together through the whole house, nothing popping out at me. Until the fact that nothing's popping out at me pops out at me. Where's Bourbon?
I put him out before we left,
he answers.
Why?
He wasn't waiting when we got here. Didn't come up when he heard the truck either.
You know, he slowed down, probably taking his time getting back from wherever he was sniffing around. I'll go find him.
I'm coming with you. I actually beat him out the door. You take your truck. Check all the barns. I'll go on the gator, I yell, already climbing on, hand ready to turn the key. He nods, so I fire it up and take off, knowing exactly where I'm headed first. Again, I wouldn't say I believe in anyone, let alone me, being psychic, but I drive straight to where I know I should and find exactly what I knew I'd find. My sweet, loyal Bourbon, already gone, having taken his last nap under our tree, the one I'd climb while he waited at the bottom, the one I got stuck in and he never left, standing guard until I was rescued, the one under which I will bury him. The enormity of yet another loss hits me all at once, and my whole body starts to shake,
racked by sudden, violent sobbing. I cry for another goodbye I didn't get to say. I wail up at the sky for another loved one leaving while I wasn't around to hold them, be by their side as they transitioned to somewhere bigger than this earthly existence. I spin around frantically, looking for something, anything, to kick, hit, or destroy. And just as I'm about to ram my fist into the tree trunk, I stop myself cold. I can't punch our tree. It means too much. A blameless, beautiful piece of nature that holds so many memories I refuse to desecrate. Bourbon would not like that. And just as quickly as boiling anger raged up inside me, it burns out, leaving nothing but ashes of complete sorrow. I suck up my tears, wipe my face, and take several deep breaths. Feeling somewhat in control of my emotions, I sit down beside the body of my dog and slowly stroke his fur, letting the words leave my mouth with no concern on whether or not they even make sense. They say it always happens in threes. "Well, I've now lost all three of you," I croak out, letting more now gentle tears fall without shame. "But I know you'll be okay, because I don't believe the crap about separate heavens for humans and animals. I mean, God made both and put them together for a reason. Why keep them apart for eternity? Wouldn't make sense." "No." I wipe my nose on my sleeve because I don't have a Kleenex or a fuck to give at the moment. "I know you're in the right heaven. With them. Hadley and Mom. Go find them, boy. Sniff them out." And oddly, I feel a hint of a smile tug at the corner of my mouth, picturing that reunion. "Probably wouldn't have been fair to keep you all to myself, I guess. It's been a lot longer since Hadley's seen you. She'll be so happy. And now, you can all three look down together, laughing at me and cringing for me as I fumble my way through life down here. Till it's my turn."
"Oh, baby, I'm so sorry."
Keaton sits beside me and wraps his arms around me. I'd heard him pull up but didn't look. No need. He found his way over just fine.
"Yeah, me too."
I rest my head on his shoulder.
"I'll miss him so much. What a great dog he was."
"The best,"
he agrees. We sit in silence for a long time, his arm staying tight around me. All I need from him. He doesn't rush me or move an inch, even though I know the ground has to be getting uncomfortable. After a while, Bourbon's body starts to get stiff as I continue to pet him, and I know it's time.
"Goodbye, Bourbon. I love you very much, and will miss you every day. You were the best dog a girl could ask for, and I'll never forget you. I'll see you again one day, buddy."
I kiss my still trembling hand and place it on his head, then stand, taking one final moment to gather myself. Keaton stands too and says his farewell to the dog he knew almost as well as I did, then turns to me.
"What do you want me to do, baby? I could."
He pauses.
"Build him a nice box, or we could take him to the vet and..."
"No, none of that. If you will, could you just bury him here, under the tree? Right in the ground, no box. I don't want him caged in. Want him one with the earth. This land. I'll make him a cross or something."
A sob catches in my throat.
"To market. And let Bree and Mike know so they can handle it should Brooke stumble upon it. Also, tell them I'll be coming to visit often."
"Anything you want. I'll take care of it."
He kisses my forehead.
"I'm gonna ride back home while you, finish up here. Thank you."
"Henny, are you gonna be okay? I could come with you and do this later, after you're asleep or before you get around tomorrow. Don't really want you alone right now, baby."
"I'll be fine."
I muster up a weak smile.
It'd mean a lot if you'd do it now. Want him put to rest?
Hen.
I said I'm fine. I cut him off. I'm all grown up now and knew it was coming. I softened my voice. I'll see you in a bit.
Yeah.
He compromises in a concerned tone.
I'll be right up. If you need anything, though, call my cell. I mean it. And I love you.
I love you, too. Bye, Bourbon. I say one last time and turn to head home.
Chapter 38. I'm not really fine. I'm sad as hell. But I'm taking it better than I thought I would. It might be because it's a dog versus a person, or the fact that I'm older and sadly accustomed to loss. Whatever the reason, I feel like I've made huge leaps and bounds. I mean, sure, I might be sitting out on the roof like I'm 15 again and can't handle shit with my feet on the ground, but I'm not drinking, there's not currently a thunderstorm, and I have no desire to pack my stuff and run. So it's progress in my book. And peaceful. At least for now. I can hear Keaton in the house yelling my name, more frantically each time, but he'll figure it out soon. And when he does, I'll be a new kind of not fine, of the in trouble variety, thus ending the peace I'm out here trying to find in the first place. So I stare up at the stars, taking long inhales and slower exhales, sending my final wishes and thoughts into the atmosphere with the little time I have left. Here he comes. You could hear his big, booted feet thumping up the stairs a mile away while wearing earplugs. The window slides up, and we have detonation, as expected.
Henley Jean Calvert, he barks. I know you're upset, but what I say about the roof, woman. I seem to recall offering to stay with you to avoid situations like this.
You said no roof while there's a storm or a bottle of wine involved. Neither of those things are in effect. I bark right back. And may I remind you, I spent many nights on this roof when I was younger, without your interference, and managed just fine.
You know I'm coming out after you, right? Don't move.
He grumbles, and I watch, amused as he pulls off his boots, then once again, barely squeezes himself through the window. He's no small man by any means, and the window is, so his successful struggle is both comical and impressive. He steps carefully and takes a seat at my side.
I don't know which I should be more concerned about. The fact that you think this is safe and don't listen to a damn thing I say, or the fact that you came out here, tells me you're not okay, baby. What can I do?
You already did it, didn't you? I gulp. Got him buried. Told the kings?
Yes to both.
He puts an arm around my shoulders and pulls me against him, laying a soft kiss on my temple.
But you need something more, or you wouldn't be out here. Tell me what it is and I'll give it to you.
I lay my head on his shoulder and sigh. There's nothing else you can do. Holding me is all I need. Just came out here because... Never mind, it's silly.
You know I won't think so. Nothing you're thinking or feeling is silly, and I want to help. Please say it.
You laugh, I slap.
Got it,
he says, without laughing at the warning. I feel like... up here, I'm closer to heaven. I need to feel close to heaven right now, so I can feel close to all of them.
Not silly at all, my precious girl.
I didn't handle Hadley's death well, to say the least. I wasn't even here for my mother's death, or life. And now Bourbon. I know he's just a dog, but not to me. He was a companion, a huge part of the life I left, still waiting just the same when I came back to it. And I want to get this one right. I want to handle at least one death like a normal, caring person who doesn't flip out or run away from it. I tilt my head up and look at him, finding warm eyes watching me with patience and love. Does any of that make sense?
It absolutely does, baby.
And while I'm not thrilled with the roof thing, if that's what you need, we'll sit here all night. And you are, you know, handling this very well. You've grown. Changed in certain ways. And I couldn't be more proud of you.
Thanks, I mutter, too sad to acknowledge that I might feel a bit of pride myself. We can go in.
You sure? I'm out here with you now. Take all the time you need. Henny, baby, look,
he says excitedly and points to the sky. I stare in wonder at the serendipitous shooting star and briefly close my eyes to make my wish, then open them to watch it disappear, burn out into the vast darkness. Yeah, I say with a newfound solace. I'm ready. Let's go in. He stands first and gives me his hand, cautiously moving me to walk in front of him, his hands finding a sure grip on my hips.
I'm not sure if I put this on the list and you just forgot.
His voice has a teasing lilt.
Or if I was the one who forgot. But just to be sure, let me say, you need to ask me to join you before you traipse out here in the future. Serious, baby, put it on the list.
Won't matter. I climb back through the window, then step out of the way for him to do the same. Not going to be living here much longer, and I have no immediate plans to camp out on the roof that will belong to the kings. Might be rude, and a little creepy. Inside now, he moves in closer, eliminating any room between our bodies.
That's right. Didn't think about that. But now that I have, add this to your list for damn sure. At the top in all capitals. The roof of our new home is much higher off the ground than here. And if you even think about going out on it, I will tan that ass till you can't sit down. I'm not kidding, Henley Jean. Do not do it.
His eyes are a stormy dark blue, holding mine captive.
Promise me right now.
I promise. Feet on the ground, got it? Your roof is high as hell. It's not like I'm a daredevil, sheesh. I turn to head downstairs, and for some reason, even though I clearly agreed with him, I still get a swift swat on the ass. There's just no pleasing him. The next morning when I wake up, Keaton's spot is cold, but there's a note on the pillow.
Had some errands to run. Didn't want to wake you. Be back soon. Love you. Okay.
I climb out of bed and head toward the kitchen. And stop. A piercing ache swelling up in my chest. Bourbon doesn't need his pill this morning. Or ever again. Tears swell in my eyes and I walk quickly back in the direction from which I came, away from my painful oversight. I keep my shower brief and get dressed even faster, then hurry to the gator. And within minutes, find myself at a scene becoming way too familiar. Me and a fresh mound of dirt. Beneath it, a shell that once held a precious soul I loved. Gone. Hey, boy. It comes out croaky. Just wanted to check out the job Keaton did. Looks like he got it done right. You know, Bourbon. I sit down. I was wondering why I haven't been back to their graves, but found it easy to come out here. I thought it was because with them I still feel guilty, not taking care of one, leaving the other. But I left you too, didn't I? And when I came back, you acted like nothing ever happened. Loved me unconditionally from the moment I showed back up. I drop my head in my hands and force myself to say aloud, admit the truth. She would have done the same. My mom's love was just like yours, absolute, no matter what. God, I was such a fool. I'm still just sitting there out of words, filled with thoughts, when Keaton pulls up in his truck.
Thought I'd find you here. You all right?
He saunters over, his tone vacant, as if he's gauging my mood before he picks his own. Yeah, I'm fine. I was just about to check on the horses, actually. I stand, brushing the dirt off my pants.
Already taken care of. Cows too.
He smiles. Those were your errands? I ask with narrowed eyes. Very odd choice of words he'd used for chores.
No.
He looks at the ground, then realizes his mistake and quickly recovers, gazing at me. But not fast enough. What aren't you telling me, Cash? I cock my head, an upward lift to one brow.
We can talk about it later. You take your time here. I just wanted to check on you.
Already told you I was about to leave. And chores are done, thank you, by the way. So my schedule is wide open to discuss whatever secrets you got eating you alive. I step up to him, running my hand down his arm. Spill it. He rubs the back of his neck.
Got that appointment made for you. With a female doctor outside of town. For, you know.
He stammers, unconsciously revealing an unsurety I didn't even know he was capable of, telling me again that he's not telling me everything. Turnabout is fair play, though, and fun, so I full out press him. You made a doctor's appointment for me. And they let you?
Yep. Said I was your husband. Knew all your info, piece of cake.
His voice gains confidence, but his eyes turn a guilty shade of indigo and won't directly meet mine. And you drove all the way there to make an appointment. Couldn't you just call?
Yeah. No, I called.
Caught in another one of my effortless traps. Okay. I drawl out the word, circling him, trailing a fingertip over his body as I do so. Kinda like a spider, twirling a web around him before I lay in with the final bite. So, that was a simple phone call that I should have been the one to make, but I'm gonna let it slide. Because I'm more interested in the errands that required you leaving, driving somewhere. The secrets you're not telling me that have you fidgeting like a junkie needing a fix.
Woman.
Oh, he goes straight on the defensive.
There's a big difference between secrets and surprises. Will you just let me give you some?
Are they good surprises?
No.
He now looks at me to give me a condescending smartass expression.
They're terrible, 'cause you know how I just love springing bad shit on you. Really, Henny, of course they're good.
Point taken. I nod curtly and stop circling to stand directly in front of him. Okay, yes. I'll be patient and wait for these good surprises of yours. You can breathe now, I snicker. He does, a deep one exhaling slowly through his nose.
Good Lord, I'm gonna have to rent a frickin' storage locker in another state to hide your Christmas presents, aren't I?
Maybe. I hitch a shoulder. I don't like surprises. They're never good. But who knows? You might change my mind. We'll see.
We sure will.
He grabs my waist and tugs me to him.
My money's on me. I know my girl. You'll like them.
He kisses me, a soft sweep of his lips over mine, then asks,
You ready to head to the house for some lunch? One of the top secret stops I made was.
He pauses dramatically.
The grocery store. Just a few things to get us by until we make the final move.
Very covert. I waggle my eyebrows. Yeah. Now my voice and spirit both lose their gusto. Just give me a sec. I turn back and stand over Bourbon's grave once more. I forgot to tell you, buddy. I'm gonna be moving, but not far. I'll be right next door, and I'll come see you, I promise. I feel Keaton move in behind me, saying nothing, simply offering silent support. I just wish... Keaton finishes my whisper.
That Gatlin could have said goodbye. Or you could have talked to him about it.
I spin in his arms, my brows dipped in confusion. I was gonna say I wish I would have been here with him when he died. Why would you bring up Gatlin out of nowhere? His expression is implacable. One I've never seen and can't read, but his tone is very clearly imploring.
I know you used to find comfort in talking to him. About everything. I just wondered if you wish you had him now. For support.
I give it serious consideration before I lock eyes with him and take great care to speak with the certainty I want to make sure he hears. No. It never even crossed my mind. When you need someone to talk to, or their support, you go to your best friend. The person who will not only know you well enough to understand and empathize with what you're feeling, but will selflessly do everything they can to make it better, as best they can anyway. I reach up and cup both his cheeks. That's you, Keaton. I don't need anyone else. You are my best friend, and the one I want to share everything with, good or bad, forever.
God, but I love you.
His smile is positively dazzling, the sheer happiness behind it soothing my soul.
You have no idea how happy I am to hear you say that.
Why don't you take me home, feed me lunch, and show me? I lower my lids and slowly lick my lips. Without warning, I'm hoisted over his shoulder, being carried toward his truck.
Changing up the order, baby.
The gruff sexuality in his voice sends a ripple of desire through me.
Showing you first, maybe twice, then I'll feed you.
Yeah, I'm okay with his plan. Wasn't that hungry anyway. Chapter 39. Keaton.
I knew the day that my Henny told me Gatlin was leaving signified a phenomenal step in the right direction for our relationship. One that, honestly, I never really believed, or let myself believe, would ever really happen. For fear of devastation when and if I found out I was wrong. So I forced myself to play it close to my chest, waiting for the day he'd come back and she'd turn to him once again. But he's not coming back. I know that now for sure. Henley needs, wants, me by her side, no matter the circumstances. Having reconfirmed it, with those words of pure conviction sliding past her sweet, pink lips, while dealing with the death of Bourbon, she just erased any shred of doubt still lurking in the very back of my mind. Every errand I'd ran, that I was nervous may have been premature, I now know was done right on time. My girl had no doubt or hesitation in her voice, her beautiful eyes, when she told me. I'm her listening ear, her rock she knows she can lean on, her man, erasing any of my doubt. I'm her chosen partner in life, and Lord knows I choose her right back. Do you know how hard it is to sit down and pretend to talk to someone who's not there, fake a handshake with nothing but air? I do. Because the night I was invited in to meet, shake hands with, and have a seat to get to know Gatlin, there was no one else in the room besides me and my Henny. Not gonna lie, at first I was more than a bit freaked out, severely worried about my girl. But I went along with it that night, and every other time she said his name because I love her. I love her so much that whatever headspace she's living in, I'm living there too, with her. I meant it when I swore to never be apart from her again. I did some research and made a phone call to a guidance center, posing as a concerned parent, and got some answers I could live with. Gatlin was just a manifestation Henley had conjured up as a coping mechanism. In simple terms, an imaginary friend, to help her deal with her pain, guilt, someone to talk to, born of the acute memories all attacking her at once with her return home. And yes, I'd been jealous of her male apparition because, real or not, I wanted to be the one she talked to. But I held on, waiting for her to choose me and send him away, which she's now done. I'd never tell her, because I know my girl, and she'd go back to thinking she's crazy, constantly looking over her shoulder just waiting for someone to send her away again. Over my dead fucking body. I don't think she mentioned him to anyone else, but if it ever does come up, I'll look that person in the eye and vouch for his existence like I'm quoting the Psalms. No one is messing with my girl ever again. I love her sane, crazy, mad, happy, every single nuance that makes up my Henny. Yet part of me wishes there was a way to tell her, because then she'd know exactly how resilient and strong she really is. She fixed that fence, took care of the horses, loaded those calves, and went to a sale all by herself. She faced the memorial, church, and graveside services for her mom alone. She thought he was there helping her, but no. My baby did all that on her own. Henley Jean Calvert will never know just how much of a fighter she is, and that part's a shame. But I know how amazing she is. Always have. And we'll find other ways to tell her as much every day. And with this, our last night in her house, my plans and her declaration couldn't have met up at a better time. The Kings are ready to move in, and my house is ready for us. Honestly, I replaced more than I probably needed to. But any woman I'd ever had there had been so brief and meaningless, which I'd feel bad about had they not known the score up front. I wasn't even sure of the safe and not safe areas and furniture. So I changed it all. Absolutely worth every penny, though. Now I know. Everything Henny and I do, anywhere in our home, will be a first. I've waited a lifetime, literally, to connect my present, future, and forever to Henley's. The two of us, one existence. And tonight, I ask her if she truly wants the same thing as much as I always have.
Henley. As promised, Keaton showed me twice. Once slow and gently, the other crazed and beastly, how much he liked what I said to him. Then fed me, which sent me straight into a nap. Apparently a long one, because when I sit up and stretch, I can see it's dark outside. I get up and search the house for him, coming up empty. No sexy cowboy, no note. But his truck is out front. Weird. Even more strange, from somewhere in the house, A Thousand Years by Christina Perry starts playing. What the hell? I follow the sound of the song that I personally love, but have no clue why I'm hearing it. It leads me to my phone and seeing Keaton's name on the screen. I answer amidst my sheer bafflement. How do you know this song? I ask in place of hello. His deep laugh kisses my ear.
I didn't until today. Took some advice, read the lyrics, and knew no other song would tell you as perfectly. Do you like it?
I love it. My reply, a dreamy wisp. But whose advice? My inner territorialism rears its possessive head, because I know damn good and well only a female would recommend that song, and I want to know who Lil Miss Helpful was.
Love, Jealous Henny, he growls. I'll tell you when we get to that part.
What part? Where are you? Why are you calling me?
Would you be so kind as to come meet me up on the roof?
He asks coyly. So now you're encouraging that? I'm so lost right now.
As long as I'm up here with you, it's fine. I told you that. Now get your pretty ass moving. Don't keep me waiting.
And with that, he ends the call. I pat down the bedhead I know I'm sporting, quickly brush my teeth, 'cause, you know, nap breath, and head up the stairs.
Hey, gorgeous.
He greets me at the window with a wolfish smile, giving me his hand.
Fancy meeting you here.
I climb through it and let him lead me over to the middle, where he guides us to sit down by the tea-light candles he has lit. Mr. Safety? I snicker. I'm pretty sure open flames on a roof are strongly discouraged.
Yeah, probably.
He chuckles.
Which is why there's only three. In glass, and a fire extinguisher right behind me. Just don't knock them over, and we'll be fine.
I nod, waiting in overwhelming, body tingles producing anticipation to see what he's building up to.
Henley Jean Calvert.
He rises to his knees and takes my hand in his.
I have loved you since the day you tried to beam a rock off of me, before I even knew that the immediate fascination I felt for you was love. and I have loved you every single day of my life since. Even when you were gone. Not a day went by that I didn't think of you, try to find you and pray you'd come back and I'd get another chance. There is nothing that makes me feel more alive than being in your presence, despite your moods.
He winks.
You were put on this earth to be adored by me. I'm convinced of it. The feelings I have for you are all-consuming. No one has ever loved another as deeply as I love you. It's just not possible.
He uses his thumb to wipe away my happy tears and leans in to feather his lips across mine.
So I'm asking.
He digs in his pocket, opens the small black box he's pulled out, and holds up the most beautiful ring I've ever seen. White gold, large, square-cut diamond and braided bands. It's simplistically elegant and speaks to how well he knows me. If handed a catalog, it's the one I would have chosen.
Henley Jean. My Henny. My baby. Will you please be my wife?
I gaze up from the ring into his hopeful blue eyes, glazed with a sheen of nervous purpose, and whisper in captivated awe.
Yes. God, yes, Keaton, I'd love to marry you.
He lets out a whoop so loud, I know my family heard it in heaven, then wraps me up in his arms, peppering kisses all over my face, lips, hair, and neck. He pulls back and with a steady hand, slides the ring on my trembling finger with a choppy laugh. What's funny? I ask. He shakes his head and kisses my hand.
I just can't believe it. After all these years, some spent optimistic, some spent hopeless, and some spent without you at all. You're finally going to be my wife. It's like my life can actually begin now.
I love you. I grab his face and take control, kissing him with every ounce of love, happiness, and rejuvenation I feel. When I'm forced to take a breath, I continue to hold his handsome face in my hands. I love the ring, too. You picked perfectly. Was that your errand today?
One of them, yeah. Told you you'd like my surprise.
He smirks smugly.
Let's blow out these fire hazards and go celebrate inside.
Not so fast, I quip. The song, my ringtone. While it's perfect and I love it, I do believe we're to the part where you tell me who gave you such sound advice. I quirk a brow.
The lady who sold me the ring. The married, pregnant lady who sold me the ring.
He adds with an arrogant, knowing wink.
But because your jealousy gets my dick as hard as the diamond on your finger, let's pretend it was a busty, flirtatious young chick, and once we get inside, you should definitely exert your frustration and ravenously remind me who I belong to.
He wiggles his eyebrows. 3 times in 1 day, I laugh.
Fine,
he mockingly sighs, blowing out the candles and standing.
You're the boss. I'll go 4, but just because I love you and you're practically begging.
You know we have an early, very busy day tomorrow.
You had a nap. I have faith in you.
Keaton fucking insatiable cash. My dream come true. Epilogue. 6 months later.
Well, hello, ladies.
Keaton saunters into the barn where Brooke and I are double-checking our mounts on scotch and barley before our ride.
Uncle Keaton!
Brooke squeals, running over to throw her arms around him.
Do you want to go riding with us?
Us?
He stares at me, eyes narrowed to bossy, angry slits, one of which may actually be twitching a bit.
Baby, please tell me she doesn't mean my wife as part of her us.
Yes, I'm his wife, and he never gets tired of saying it. So much so, that sometimes I kid him that I suspect he's forgotten my actual name. We got married at the church in front of a small crowd. Brooke, our flower girl, Keaton's father, my escort down the aisle, and Donna standing at my side, crying the entire time. Keaton had boxed up their bedrooms for me in the move, so he knew exactly where to look, and had pictures of my mom, Hadley, and even one of Bourbon at the ceremony. He ensured me they were all there, and while his gesture warmed my heart, he needn't have bothered.
They were there anyway in spirit. I swear I could feel their love surrounding me as they watched from afar. And Keaton Cash in a tux? Well, let's just say, no. I better not think about it with Brooke anywhere in close proximity, because I can't be held responsible for my actions when I revisit the vision of my husband that day. I shake away my wayward thoughts and return to the battle upon me. Do you see anyone else here? I put my hand on my hip, giving him the look.
Brooke, honey, why don't you go play outside the barn for a minute? Me and Aunt Henley need to talk.
Keaton asks her in a nicely strained tone while staring loving daggers at me.
It's okay. I already know what you're gonna say. Just don't use cuss words. My mommy doesn't like me to hear them, and I'll be fine.
Even in the heat of the upcoming argument, I snicker and the corner of Keaton's mouth twitches. The little girl is irresistible.
No promises there, sweetie,
he laughs.
Depends on if she cooperates or not.
His eyes slowly graze down my body and land on my stomach, and like always, his face breaks out into a wide, brilliant smile.
Henny.
He uses my name as a soft plea.
That's mine. My baby in there. I'm damn proud you're ready to ride again. But not while you're pregnant.
Keaton, you were sitting right there when the doctor said it was fine in my first trimester, as long as I keep it at a walk or slow trot. I just want to spend some time with Brooke doing something. I can't stay in that house, having you treat me like a china doll another second.
Well, doctor, that's my baby is pulling rank, and I say no. No, Henny. It's not worth the risk. You make one move toward that horse, and I will tan that a- But,
he adjusts for Brooke's sake. Fine. My head drops to my chest in defeat. You're right. I don't want to take any risks either. I'm just so bored.
Brooke,
he says.
Time to release the secret weapon?
She shrieks, and my head pops up, curious to see what's got her so excited.
Yep,
he nods.
I'll let you do the honors.
She runs away quicker than I can ask her where she's going, and Keaton, he's leisurely rocking back and forth on his heels, wearing a self-assured grin. What do you two have planned? I ask.
No riding, woman, I mean it. Promise me.
He grits past a now clenched jaw. I promise, I easily agree and rub my tummy. You're right, I was being stupid. Won't happen again. But the doctor did say...
Doctor said, you're gonna be a daddy. No gonna be about it. I started being a daddy that very second, and you know how serious I am about taking care of you.
I nod, happiness welling up in my eyes.
Well, then just imagine how I feel about our child. A piece of both of us that we made together. The ultimate creation of my lifelong dream. You and me, being one.
I love you, I whimper, wiping my tears.
And I'll worship you, and our baby. Come here.
He holds open his arms and I rush into them, cocooned in pure adoration.
No horses.
He grumbles once more, kissing the top of my head.
You want to play cowgirl? I got something you can ride anytime you want.
Stop! I laugh and swat his arm. Brooke might hear you.
Speak of the angel. Turn around, baby.
He speaks softly. I spin in his arms and gasp, covering my mouth with both hands. Brooke is standing but a few feet away, grinning ear to ear, holding a puppy.
Me and Uncle Keaton picked him out.
Her eyes go wide.
I mean, no, this little guy just wandered up to the house looking for you. Shoot, sorry.
Her face falls and Keaton laughs behind me.
It's okay, Brooke. She'd have figured us out anyway. Go see your present, baby.
He nudges me forward. I walk slowly toward Brooke and my new puppy. She hands me the black and white bundle of fur that starts giving me puppy breath kisses.
It's a border collie. Very smart dogs. And it's a boy, so we could name him Bailey, an Irish whiskey.
Brooke babbles.
I'm going to help you take care of him and train him, especially when your belly's too big for you to bend over.
Thank you, I laugh. That'll come in real handy. And I think Bailey is the perfect name.
Bailey,
I whisper and kiss my dog. Big paws to fill, buddy. But I have faith in you.
Do you like him, Henny?
I turn at Keaton's question and take a minute to soak him in. The boy from my childhood, now all man, gorgeous, loving, bossy, and sexier every day.
Yeah, I like him.
Not too soon.
His brows crumple in concern. No, I shake my head.
Not too soon. Thank you.
Anything for you, Henley Jean Cash. Anything.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Unstable, written by S.E. Hall, performed by Brooke Bloomingdale, producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2016 by S.E. Hall. Production copyright 2016 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.